another episode of What Matters in North Carolina. On today's show, we will be tuning into a conversation between Susan Myrick and Ed Nail from New Hampshire, who works with voter fraud there. But before we get to that, I want to talk to you about subscribing to the podcast. If you're not subscribed to the show, then you are missing out on the easiest way to listen to What Matters in North Carolina, to get it to your device, whether it's your phone, your computer, your tablet, whatever. Just go where you listen to podcasts, whether if you're on Apple and you're listening on Apple Podcasts, or you're an Android user, you're using Podcast Addict or in some other app, search What Matters in North Carolina there, and you can keep up with what we're doing on this show. Also, follow along with us on social media because we want to hear from you. We want to hear your opinions on what we're doing here, and we want to hear what you want us to talk about on the show. And to do that, you can engage with us on social media on Facebook and Twitter at What Matters NC. Again, that is What Matters NC on Facebook and Twitter. And that is where you will find us there. Now, if you want to listen to past episodes of this show or the other shows on the Freedom Action Network, you can do that by going to the Freedom Action Network website, and that's freedomactionnetwork.com, and you can listen to past episodes of this show or the NC Gun Dad show, or you can listen to the Freedom Brew show, and you can do that there. Now, we will move right into our segment with Susan Myrick.
Today, we're going to go outside of North Carolina to look at how another state has been attacking voter fraud. North Carolina had a few good years from 2011 to 2013. The legislature attempted to change election law, but any major reforms have been overturned in the courts. And now, unfortunately, the legislature seems to be worn down, and they don't want to even entertain new voter ID or an elimination of same-day registration law. That's not the case in New Hampshire, where things appear to be changing along with the election of a new governor. There's a man in New Hampshire that is at the forefront of voter fraud investigations in the state. His name is Ed Nail, and he is on the phone today with us. He's chairman of the Coalition of New Hampshire Taxpayers. He's investigated and documented voter fraud for decades, and he's even worked with James O'Keefe to expose fraud and corruption in elections. Tell us about New Hampshire. Tell us about something that I had never heard of before. I talked to you several years ago for the first time, something called voter fraud nests.
Yeah, New Hampshire is a very small state, and we entertain the presidential primary here every 2 years, because they start 2 years before the primary. People will start announcing and sneaking through New Hampshire to get a feel of the place and trying to make some friends if they're going to run for president. And I'm one of those contacts from, let's say, the conservative side that comes through here. So we're well aware of what goes on and who's who. It's such, there's only a 1.3 million people in the whole state, although we have over 1 million people registered to vote. And when you have 200,000 kids in school, it comes real close to being 100% voter registration. But what happens here is we don't have a public way of getting a hold of the statewide database. The HAVA came through in 2002, and we had to create the statewide database, but it's been restricted to
primary candidates,
and PACs and the parties. So if you're running for governor, you get to see the whole statewide database. If you're running for a House seat in one district, you only get to see that district. So for us to track voter fraud, all we get really is some large numbers now and then. And what makes me suspicious here in New Hampshire is the amount of people who are registered to vote as opposed to the people that live here, and the large differences in people registering to vote and people disappearing from the rolls. Now, recently we had Speaker of the House, Sean Jasper, requested the Secretary of State to try and settle this and maybe get some information out for the legislature to quiet down some of the accusations of voter fraud. And he got a response from the Secretary of State, who ran some voters' names through the Department of Safety, which would be your DMV, I guess, there, the Department of Safety, and came up with over 6,000 people had registered to vote, and not between then and August 16th of 2017 gotten a driver's license or registered a car. That's required under state statute, under motor vehicle laws. You have to 60 days to, if you move here, to register your car and your vehicles that are going to stay in the state.
So, Ed, what you're saying is your Speaker of the House actually went and asked for this data to get you guys to shut up, to finally put an end to the talks of voter fraud, and what he got.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah,
surprised him.
Speaker Jasper was elected by Democrat votes, so he's he's not really that interested in discovering voter fraud from my interactions with him over the years, and it's been a long time. So I think he was just trying to settle this and be over with, and maybe a handful of numbers. Well, what we got was the 6,000 numbers, but if you look closely, the Secretary of State only used November 8th, the day of the general election in 2016. That's the only numbers he sent in. And we have a lot of people register same day. So what I'm thinking is, when you look at the Secretary of State's website with the amount of people who get on and get off the rolls, we had, after between November 8th, that's the general election, and December 28th, over 19,000 people removed from the rolls, the voter rolls, on the statewide database that I can't see. Now, right after an election, our election officials are like one-armed paper hangers trying to put all the same-day registrants in their town that walk in and say, hi, I want to vote today, I have no ID, take my picture and I'll swear that I am who I am and I'll disappear. All those names and the addresses that are given have to be entered into the statewide database. And when you ask for information after an election, they say, oh, we won't be finished till March, maybe April. But somehow they managed to get 19,000 people off the rolls. And I'd like to know, maybe we should check those 19,000 people. You know, if Sean Jasper, the Speaker of the House, wants to know how many people are running around the state of New Hampshire voting and don't have a driver's license or never were domiciled here, wouldn't it be nice to add those? And the other suspicious number is, between December 28th and 2015 and our February 9th presidential primary here in New Hampshire of 2016, 72,000 people got on the rolls. That's 1,400 a day.
Wow.
Even with all of Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders people stomping the bushes, it's hard to get that many people to register to vote every day.
Sure.
So I'd like to see, maybe we should have the Secretary of State review those numbers. And instead of just the people who registered same day election day on November 8th, and that was a couple thousand maybe, but instead of doing that, let's do the whole package and get a really good glimpse of where New Hampshire is. While the Trump Election Integrity Commission is still functioning, this is a golden opportunity to review what exactly is happening in New Hampshire, just not taking a little pinprick of a look at one day of the year.
Well, we're fortunate in North Carolina, I must say. The one thing we're fortunate in is that we do have access to our voter rolls. I can go right now and pull out all the people who registered or who are registered to vote. Are you telling me of those 19,000 people removed in that short period of time, would you be able to get a list of those people from the Board of Elections or your?
No way.
No. Wow.
No, almost nothing is public information anymore. The more I pry into this, the more they seem to make public documents disappear. It has gotten so bad that I went out to Keene, which is a college town, a year ago, and I asked for their city list of voters. And it used to be $36 or $40 or something. I had about $60-$70 on me. They said, well, it's $125. Wow. And I said, what? I just bought it for $35 or whatever. And she said, well, that's orders from the Secretary of State's office. We have to charge $125 for the whole city. I said, all right, so I'll come back. I drove home 45 minutes, and I drove back 45 minutes to Keene. And they said, do you have that form that we gave you to fill out to request the Keene voter checklist? I said, yeah, and I handed it to them. They took it. They said, you're not allowed to have that. That's not a public document. I said, what? I said, a document I signed my name to isn't a public document to me? And they said, well, that's orders from the Secretary of State's
office. So had they called the Secretary of State while you were gone?
Yeah, go ahead.
Had they called the Secretary of State while you were gone and were ready for you when you came back?
I don't know, but I know they're suspicious of me.
Right.
In Keene, years ago, I went in and I would ask for the voter registration card from a voter and give the name. And they'd say, well, here it is. And I said, now, can I have the other one? Because his name is on the checklist twice. And they, so they're very careful how they answer me. So, but to to have the application to purchase the city's voter checklist not be a public document. You're getting down into the weeds here of not letting somebody like myself get a hold of these documents. I would be able to tell who else purchased if I said I'd like to request a copy of the names of all the individuals who bought this, City of Keene's checklist. And if they gave them to me, I could decipher who was buying them and what organizations they were with or something like that. But to hide that, I mean, that's really pathetic. And I haven't seen that in state law. It was the officials there. I have to go back with an official right to know request and be denied in writing. And then I have that to pursue. I can take them to court and try and get it or take it to state representatives. I was at a meeting yesterday. There must have been 25 state representatives there, a couple senators. And they're very keen on tightening up some of these laws. So I got to talk to a couple of them that I'm going to send some emails to, and we'll chat about making things public. But one was horrified that I could not get my hands on the statewide database, which here in New Hampshire, I just send an email to the state of Vermont, and once a month they send me their statewide database for nothing. It's updated. So when I want to track Vermont voters here in New Hampshire, I have the statewide database from Vermont. Connecticut's is public. I can check them in Connecticut, and I get some sort of a voter history occasionally.
And I can't imagine what you could do if you had that New Hampshire database. I think you would break it wide open if you had a chance at it. Let me ask you to tell our North Carolina listeners what voter fraud nests are. I don't think they've ever heard of this term before.
The
voter nests that the people who
Here in New Hampshire, we have different locations where people from out of state can come and safely vote and work on campaigns. And we caught one. There's a state senator named Martha Fuller Clark, and she had probably eight people at her home in Portsmouth. She has $1 million home in Portsmouth in the historic district. And a couple of years back, somebody checked, and they gave me the information that she had up to eight people living there that weren't direct relatives or were actually living somewhere else. And we checked on them, and I'll give you one example. One guy's name is Brian Gregory Griffith, and he's an attorney from Arkansas. So Brian got caught. I mean, he voted here, and we got the name, and we did a little background search on him. Well, Arkansas has a statewide income tax. So what this guy is saying is when the AG went to investigate the eight people, they investigated Brian Gregory Griffith and said, well, you know, he had established a presence at this location. Well, our Constitution says you have to establish a domicile, various laws say you have to establish a domicile, not a residence, a domicile. That's specific. So we use that as an example to expose these different locations. She's been having people admitted, having people there for years stay at her house and work on campaigns. Well, staying at the house and working on a campaign is not establishing a residence, a domicile, a home. You're there temporarily, and the city of Portsmouth has rules against letting people stay at your house or renting out rooms. So if they're not paying, they're staying there for nothing, it's a voter fraud nest. We caught one at 1200 Elm Street. There were dozens and dozens of people over the years of multiple campaigns working for Obama and Clinton and whatnot. And an example would be we caught, I think, a woman named Caitlin Ann Legacki. She was here in 2008 working for Gene Shaheen, and then in 2010 she was in your state working for Senator Hagan.
Senator Hagan.
Hagan. In 2012 she was working for Claire McCaskill, Senator McCaskill, and she voted in Missouri on whatever date it was in 2012, and her name was checked off on the voter list here in New Hampshire. Because in 2008, she had stayed at 1200 Elm Street with a group of other people who were working on campaigns. Since her name was never taken off the voter checklist, anybody can walk in and check off her name. So because I can't get a hold of I can't go through the statewide database and confirm things like this, I would have to go town to town to town. It's another big problem. But that was a nest. And once we started to expose that nest and the other one on the radio, the one at State Senator's house and the one at 1200 Elm, the city clerk in Manchester, God bless him, purged the voter list of his city right after we exposed that. He sent out 8,000-some-odd letters to people who hadn't voted in two election cycles, and he got 4,400 back as undeliverable.
Wow.
Now, that's a large number of these individuals
that
had been here and were left open on the rolls. of the 8,000 letters he sent out, only 103 people responded in writing saying, yes, I want to stay on the voter checklist.
Wow.
So that's the wide disparity in numbers you see in New Hampshire. And it's never going to get corrected until they release the statewide database to the public for us to review. And every mom and pop and people in their pajamas can point this out.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, let's talk about something else that we have in common. Every once in a while, you'll come across people that have been through North Carolina before, and one of those people is Carl Robert Gibson. I think he was arrested in North Carolina at a Moral Monday protest.
Yes.
In 2013, well, I think.
Oh, yeah. Carl's one of our best catches. Carl was here in New Hampshire in 2008 and 2012. When he got arrested in 2012, I think it was, he got arrested. There was a special election for a House seat, and it was a young lady named Yvonne Dean Bailey running for that seat. She was a college student. And he came with, I think Credo Pack might have been who was paying it, but he came here to work against this young lady and for the hardcore left-wing candidate that was running for this House seat. So he was using every dirty trick he could. So what he did was he made up an email similar to hers and sent it to the newspapers and said she was withdrawing from the race on, the Thursday before the election. And that would lessen the turnout if people thought, oh, Yvonne Dean Bailey dropped out. So a reporter from the Concord Monitor alerted the AG's office, and they arrested him. And they catch him, at his little apartment in Concord. Now, he had multiple places to live. When they arrested him, he had a driver's license from Kentucky. His car was registered in Connecticut. He had a home he voted from in Madison, Wisconsin, a commune for activists. He had the place here in New Hampshire, and his license was his parents' home in Kentucky. So once we got him, I said, oh, man, I actually have a name, a birth date, and a voting record here in New Hampshire. We set upon him. And his life has not been the same ever since. When he got arrested, they said that the arraignment was going to be at the Merrimack District Court, not far from my house. So I went down there and sat down next to someone I assumed would be maybe his lawyer. And a couple minutes later, in waddled Carl Robert Gibson, sat down with his attorney. We were brushing up against each other, and I heard the two of them plan out his defense and what would happen and what he could expect. And I ran outside and I called our bloggers that have a little radio program and I told them to post it, what I had heard. And I believe we had that on the radio and the blogs before he ever got to see the judge. And we've been tangled with each other ever since. He's still, I think he appealed his case to the Supreme Court and may still be stuck there. We haven't spent much time with him, but he would get arrested all around the country. Like, he was an early Antifa type person.
Right.
He would get arrested for refusal to leave an area. And what he did was he held up a picture of his Kentucky, of his arrest in one of the states, and it had his Kentucky driver's license number on it. And I got the number and I checked with Kentucky and it was still a valid license. He'd renewed it in a period of time when he'd been voting. So we use him as a shining example of the creeps that come to New Hampshire and stalk our state looking for votes and to do harm and to mess around with campaigns. Carl Robert Gibson, if you look up his name on the internet, Carl Robert Gibson, you'll see dozens of articles rewritten about him, and there's nothing he can do about it. He kind of has to sit back and suffer the consequences because he's guilty.
Yeah.
So that's kind of fun. We've got a couple other nests, and some of these nests you find people who work for NGP Van. That's the big database that Democrats run. You link these together, and all of a sudden, as you take a couple of steps up the voter fraud ladder, you get into the higher echelon of these fraudsters and political activists that come here and don't follow the law. And that's who we're after now. So associating myself with Civitas, guys like you, I can call up and get some information. We both now know about Gibson and other states that I talk to as well. So this is a nice thing about this. Every time one state makes a gain, North Carolina makes a gain, New Hampshire makes a gain, California is really bad. If things break loose in California and we can fix election laws there, the rest of the country is going to be a lot better off.
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
Yep.
I tell you, and there's one other thing that is alike for North Carolina and New Hampshire, but different, and that same-day registration.
Yeah.
I think in New Hampshire, you just have same-day registration on one day, right?
Same-day registration the day of the election.
The day of the election, where we have same-day registration, not on the day of the election, but 2.5 weeks ahead of election day during our early voting period, people can mm-hmm. come and register and vote and disappear, which is what they do. After they vote with, you know, minimal, they call it ID, but it's not, it's, you know, it's a utility bill or, you know, something like that, which is ridiculous. But I know New Hampshire is alike in this too. The left in New Hampshire has to say there is no voter fraud, just like the left in North Carolina says there is no voter fraud.
Yeah. Well, the prime case is Kelly Ayotte. U.S. Senator Kelly Ayotte lost her seat by 1,000 votes. I can pretty much, given the data, given the statewide database, I can name who voted against her. I can pretty much show you where those votes came from. In UNH, the University of New Hampshire, they have same-day voter registration there for the students. And there are, let's say, about 15,000 students there. And our state statutes say that only 25% of the students at any state college can be from out of state. Well, every year the college gives itself a waiver, and this last time they got a waiver, it was 52% of the students are pay out-of-state tuition. So that means something like 6,000-7,000 students just from that one town, and they vote overwhelmingly Democrat, sure. like Hanover, where Dartmouth is, and Keene State, and Plymouth, and the various colleges. That is where they get their votes. If you watch where Gene Shaheen and Hassan and the rest of these guys campaign, it's colleges for the last couple of weeks. They're college, right. college. So this, us exposing this makes it a little more difficult on them. I have one other capture of somebody who randomly came here. We caught a guy named Michael LaShawn Lewis. A friend of mine called me up and tipped me off. He said, a guy got arrested right after voting in the parking lot outside the Hooks at Town Hall. So I said, just send me whatever you can, whether it was illegal, send me something. And I looked in the news, and we eventually found the guy's name, Michael Sean Lewis. Well, upon investigation, he had voted in Florida early and Georgia early. And he came here, and he showed up at exactly 7 o'clock to vote in Hooksett. And he was in a rental car. And when the cops caught him outside for rifling through other people's vehicles, he said, well, he had flown here from Florida because he wanted to vote for Hillary Clinton. And apparently he used his Florida driver's license number as identification.
Even have to show it. He just gave a number?
Yeah, he just gave the number. See, if you give the number, that's acceptable for ID, but a real driver's license has your picture on it. So once I got the number off the police report, I checked in Florida, and I can check and find out whether that number is valid, but I can't see the driver's license. Right. So here I am. I'm just a citizen. You know, I'm a logger. I'm a tree surgeon. You know, I run chainsaws for a living, not computers. So I have to do this the best I can. But we dug into that, and it was a valid Florida license. But I'm assuming his picture isn't on it. He would have gladly shown it. And since he was rifling through cars, it could have been stolen from somewhere. But the key thing is, he rented a car to go to Hooksett. So in the police report is the rental car from Massachusetts. License plate number. So people are always saying, oh, there's all kinds of Massachusetts plates going past the town hall on election day. What are all these people from Massachusetts doing here voting? And the left always has an excuse.
Sure.
Well, they don't have an excuse for Michael LaShawn Lewis because I have the license number. It's a rental car from Massachusetts. He stole a vote and was out trying to steal items out of people's cars after he voted here. And then I found out he voted in two other states. Yeah. Guy's guilty. I can write about him. I can say whether I went to his, he was supposed to show up for some sort of a court hearing in Hooks at district court, and I was down there waiting for him. He never showed up. So he's currently wanted here for failing to appear in court. So I don't think he'll come back, but that's a hard way to keep your voter list clean, isn't it?
It really is. And Ed, I tell you, you're so inspirational because this isn't your life. This isn't what you do for a living. You spend a lot of your life doing the work that needs to be done to show some type of integrity in elections. But I did find out something, which you alluded to just a minute ago, about you yesterday that I didn't know, and that you call yourself a lumberjack, right? By trade?
Yep. This New Hampshire's full of trees, you know, so I have a lot of customers.
I think that's fascinating.
I work for Steel Timber Sports. and we occasionally come down to North Carolina for events.
Well, call us when you're here, because from what I have read in articles about you, you're one of the best there is when it comes to chainsaws. So I appreciate so much you coming to talk to us today. Like I said, I think you are an inspiration. I think the people of North Carolina need a shot in the arm. They've gone through some disappointing times in the attempt to reform our elections, but we've still got some fight left in us, and I hope we can take that inspiration from you and move forward. So thank you so much, Ed.
Thanks a lot.
Well, thank you to Susan, and thanks to Ed Nail for coming on and talking with us about what's going on in New Hampshire's neck of the woods as far as voter fraud and voter issues go. So make sure you're subscribed and follow along on social media, and we'll catch you next time.